The theater, the theater.
Bring out Louis!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
What up, dudes?
What up?
It's a squelter.
A squelter?
It's hot outside.
It is a bit warm, yeah.
The sun.
Have you ever heard that before?
Itself.
You both went, a squelter?
Like, I've
a
never squelter? Heard, I've heard sweltering. I've never heard a squelter,
squelter
before.
Oh, I don't know. I probably made it up.
I like it. I love Baileyisms.
You
them.
Are a wordsmith, sir.
Much like William Shakespeare.
Yeah. Shakespeare. Yeah.
Well, you are the reincarnation of Beckett, so.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
That's an old callback. Thanks, CJ.
Yeah, it was a funny call. It was a funny joke.
Funny,
I loved
yeah,
it.
Good one. Good
bit.
One.
It was a funny bit. Listen to our Beckett episode. We took a week off.
We yes. did.
We needed did. It.
Which wasn't necessarily intentional, but we definitely needed it.
Yeah.
Because we had some craziness happen.
Had some COVID run-ins.
And a little COVID run-ins.
Things getting rescheduled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
It was a ton of stuff. And all three of us, I think, needed the week. And yeah. we took it. And it was great. And we haven't taken a break besides when we take our December breaks. We haven't taken a break in years. So
yeah.
it was
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
So thanks for that, listeners. But we're back in action. And yeah. we are currently amidst a production together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is super fun.
We're going to yes. finish this. And then we're going to drive to the theater. And we're yeah. all going to be on stage together.
It's true.
One more time. Doing That's a true. Reading of Mothers of God.
Talking about Jesus.
About Jesus.
by Rachel Burcham and our own J. Bailey Burcham.
That's right.
I always love walking in a room. I mean, I love walking in a room with a bunch of familiar faces, but it's always exciting to work with new people. And I really feel like all of us gelled pretty well and we're getting along and having a really good time. So.
Yeah, nice dressing room vibe. Like,
yeah.
yeah. Like there's no weirdos, no assholes.
Everyone's been really cool.
Other than those.
Other than
here.
CJ and Scott and I.
Yeah, other than us. We're the trouble.
Everyone's cool.
We're the problem. Yeah. If we're the problem, everything's okay because we're yeah. not terrible.
We're
know?
Not too terrible.
Anyway, we should get off Mother's Again.
Yeah,
Mother's Again was awesome. But
theater
we're here
stuff.
For a very specific purpose,
yes.
which is
yes.
to welcome you to Theater Theater. The Theater Theater, the Theater Theater podcast for Theater Theater nerds, made by Theater Theater makers from the LA Theater Theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
Yes. And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And
yeah.
I would argue this is maybe like sort of the one of the epitomes of like why I think we're doing this new format on the podcast. So I'm very excited to talk about it.
Yeah.
This week is a CJ's pick.
Yes.
CJ, what did you pick and why did you pick it?
I picked Pen 15, Season 2, Episodes 6 and 7, entitled Play and Opening Night.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to correct you, but I want to say it. The full title is actually Season 2, Part 1. Episode 6. And
oh,
correct.
Six.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
You're right.
Because it
you're
got
correct.
Split up. Which
yes.
Is, yeah,
yes. You're so
that.
Right.
Sorry. I just thought that was funny because I was like, why? And I had to read
Just do season 3.
Yeah.
Honestly, exactly. I picked this months ago because I was kind of feeling like a jackass every time it came around to my pick. And I'd be like, I don't know. And so I tried to come up with stuff months ago.
Sure.
And I am looking for any excuse to talk about this show because
sure.
I loved it so much and it hits yeah. me. I mean, it's junior high in the early 2000s, which is a tiny bit too young for me, but everything there hits with me. And
sure.
then they throw in two episodes about doing theater and I'm like, Jesus Christ, like,
yeah.
could I love this show anymore? So yeah. that's why.
Yeah.
I love this show.
Love
I'll be clear. I like half watched the second season. Like it was like on in the background while I did stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of how I watch like the back half of Broad City and things like that, where it's like shows like this or like even more sketchy stuff like Kroll show or like anything that, or like Jordan or Key and Peele, like anything that was on, you know, Comedy Central in those times, like were really easy for me as like comfort shows to just put on. Yes. And sometimes I'd like forget to watch them because I
was by sketchy, like, you mean sketch comedy as opposed to creepy.
Well, I don't know. Nick Kroll
fair
is
enough.
A little sketchy.
Nick Kroll is a little sketchy.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
No, yeah, but I really love it, and I used this as an excuse to watch all of season two again because I was just like, I didn't really watch it, whereas I did season one. Mm-hmm. So I sat down and I watched the whole thing, and it was a joy.
Yeah. Yes.
It was a Christina Joy Merriman, and I loved
it. It's a joy, and it was funny because I had hesitated starting watching the show, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, whatever it was. Because I was like, this premise won't work. There's no way that this premise works, which is, and we should tell our audience.
Longer than one episode.
Right.
Because I was like, that's a good sketch. And then it's done. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the premise is that you have two women in their mid-30s playing their middle school.
They're eighth graders, I believe.
Eighth grade versions seventh of grade. Themselves.
Seventh,
but
seventh
then
or eighth, yeah.
But then sorry. Cast around... a cast with actual 15-year-old kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this will never work. And there are a few moments that I'm like, where gender becomes a big deal. And I'm like, if this was reversed, it would never fucking work. People would lose their fucking minds if you did that. But it works. The two of them are so amazing. And they catch the angst and all of those middle school year things, you know, the horniness, the uncertainty, trying to find yourself, your identity, and all that great stuff.
The fucking playlist.
Oh yeah. And it just it just fucking worked. And sure. and then gets some of those later episodes, the one specifically about Maya's mother, that's all her whole backstory in season two.
Yeah.
Gorgeous and dealing with race and identity in that sense, in a bigger sort of existential sense. Great. It was great. Yeah.
I just want to crow about the fact that it is a glorious time to be someone my age, to be a millennial of any age, because everyone my age, a lot of people my age, are creating content right now. And if it's not nostalgia for themselves, they're creating kid shows that are also nostalgic for themselves. Like I'm thinking of like Adventure Time, which is for kids, but it was clearly written by someone my age. So it's a glorious time to be in your 30s, I think.
Yeah,
for entertainment.
A weirder one because there's so much nuance around how it was created and how it was two dudes basically like tripping acid.
That's regular show. Together.
Maybe, but this is how Adventure Time came up because I remember was a viral video that was 5 minutes long of what's his name, the kid from Adventure Time, Jake.
Finn
and Jake. And his dog running around doing the show. I've never really watched the show, but I was in college when this short came out, and people were like, dude, this thing is so fucking trippy. So fucking trippy. And we'd be like, whoa, okay, cool. And it was this really fucking trippy. You'd get high and you'd sit and you'd watch it 5 minutes of like really hardcore weird shit. And he was just passing through all the lands of Adventure Time or whatever. But a year later or so, somebody was like, this just got picked up by Cartoon Network. And we were all like, what? And it was like, I believe it started on Adult Swim. It was supposed to be like a little weirder and kind of whatever. But they were like, okay, but you have to like delete, like scrub that original thing from the internet because it's the whole lore around it is drugs. And we can't put that on our, you know, television series. So I think there was like a weird, I might be talking out of my ass a little bit about this, but there was some weirdness about like one of them quit and one of them stayed on or something.
Oh.
I don't remember.
See, now the story I heard with regular show was two dudes, the concept of the cartoon, drop acid. And then they hallucinate themselves being a blue jay and a raccoon.
Yes, I've heard that too. But I think this is like more like the start of all of those things happening. Uh-huh. Like people starting to be like, what if we just like dropped acid and made an Adult Swim show? Well, and it works. And that's why they've done what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And honestly, that's what Three Guys, One Groupon was. but all that to say, I think it's a very good time to be a millennial in pop culture.
It is. World. It's fun.
Because we're also very nostalgic. We're a very nostalgic generation. We just fucking are.
Everyone's fucking nostalgic.
No,
like,
for sure.
Back to the Future is all about the 50s. Like,
true, sure.
Or
sure.
That first one.
Yeah.
Is.
I mean, I think that from my generation, Gen X on, there is no generation worse about nostalgia than baby boomers.
Like, in terms of like holding on to the past.
In terms of holding on to the past, and you know, I have slowly become you know, anti-nostalgia entirely. I think it's mostly boring, and people lean on it as their main thing as opposed to using it as a spice. I think nostalgia is like red pepper. In a recipe, you use it sparingly to give it some flavor. And
sure. Well, and now it's almost like its own art form or its own genre of media, which you can, you know, engage with in whatever ways you want. I don't tend to engage with a ton of it, but like things like the Marvel movies became nostalgic for me in the fact that it took 10 years to get to Endgame. Mm-hmm. Then watching Endgame was this, like, remember Iron Man, though? You know, like that. And it didn't have to even try. It just did it. It just, like, showed me everything I wanted to see. And I was like, great. And it did every callback and every, like, you know, whatever. But people want that so badly now. And because we're a culture of gimme, Mamba. right now, TikTok, quick.
Member.
Yeah, because we have eaten so many member berries.
Yeah.
We have gotten to a point where we're obsessed with it. But to pivot back to Pen 15, what I think this threads the needle on is being it. Okay, this is going to sound counterintuitive to what I said about theater camp, because I thought theater camp was too real. And I was like, I still loved it so much. No, it was fun. I gave it 4 stars on fucking Letterboxd. It was great. But I still walked out like, I'll never watch it again. Like, it just hit me in the worst ways. And I was like, fun. That was so fun to watch with y'all. Never again. And we'll cover it someday, I'm sure. And I just won't rewatch it. Ayo is hilarious. Let's talk about her. Yeah. But besides that, I think, like, Pen 15 threads the needle of being, like, cringe. It's the cringe I want, right? Like, it's that eighth grade, but the Bo Burnham movie. It's that thing, too. Where I'm like, yes, this is exactly, but what they're doing, I'm like, this is exactly it, and it's sincere, even when it's absurd, right? There was, in this episode, she pulls out her tit at one point, and the girl starts sucking on it, and I was like, wait, I forgot where we are. But, like, there's, that was so ridiculous. Yeah. She's, like, biting on her nipple, and she
it was weird.
It was really funny.
Unclench, unclench.
Unclench, unclench. Really good. Yeah.
Nostalgia culture is
crazy.
It is crazy, but I think another thing that made this show really work for me is, and, you know, obviously I was a junior high girl just like them. The stuff that they go through, whether it's, like, cringy or humiliating or scary or, like, going through, your parents are getting divorced. Like, there's so much of that stuff there that I guess when I was that age, it's like, God, I wish someone would have just been upfront with me about some of this stuff and talked me through it and been there for me through it.
You
as
didn't
opposed
watch Degrassi?
To
just... Come on. That's how I learned everything.
I watched Daria.
Well, Daria and Degrassi is Daria and Degrassi. All of my social education. Yeah.
But I think you hit the nail on the head there, CJ. I think the universality of the stuff that they're talking about, that's what makes it thrive. They could have put it in any time period. They could have done a 60s version. They could have done a 50s version.
Yeah.
And it still would have worked because they just nailed the ennui and the desperation and the anxiety of that transition into, you know, young adulthood. And, you know, there, and these two episodes in particular, which I think speak to the three of us and will speak to any theater geek in in any form. Mm-hmm. It was magical because they just nailed it. They nailed all those little things so well.
Yeah, they did. Now, this is, I think, I'll double check this, but I'm like pretty sure this is meant to be literally my grade. Class of 2009.
Okay.
So like, it is really...
That sounds about right.
I think that's right.
I think it, well, I think it's like 19, I think it's like 2000 and they're in seventh grade.
Right. So yeah. Maybe not. So maybe
there's some Casey and Joe. I think they're right in between us. Baby.
Yeah. Okay. So they might even be a couple years above me. Right. Mm-hmm. They would have been in high school the same time I was in high school.
Yeah.
Same with you. Right. Like, but like on opposite sides. Mm-hmm. But they are tapping into things, especially in these two episodes, actually, I would argue. Especially the second one, which is so less theater driven, but I was still like, yeah, there's so much to talk about here because of the stuff with Gabe in the car. Like, I did like nine of those. Yeah. I was Gabe in half of them. You know what I mean? I'm like, yes, of course. Yes. Yeah. And there's that moment where you have to go, fuck, I have to get out of the car now. You know? And it's like, oh, God, it hit me viscerally. It hit me in ways I can't even like process yet. Yeah, it was great.
Don't want to know what happens?
That's what I was going to ask you. How do you plan to break this down? Are you breaking it down in two eps, or are you breaking the whole thing down, or the whole show? Like, what is your, how are you doing?
I did the two episodes together in a breakdown.
Okay, well, let's hear it.
No.
CJ's breakdown.
Maya has been cast as one of the leads in the spring show, but not Anna. Anna ends up getting in with the techies and eventually is promoted to stage manager. Will their friendship withstand the power and popularity dynamics? Will Maya get her first kiss on stage? Will the show go on?
Dot, 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 question mark, exclamation point. The first thing you started with, one of them gets the role, one of them doesn't. Now... I love a scene.
I just got chills thinking about it.
It's the High School Musical moment. It's like the sillier version of it, right? Where you walk up and you see your name on the cast list. Now we've all done it.
We've all been waiting for the list to be posted.
But what's amazing about this moment, in my opinion, is that they all walk up and there's four roles.
There's four roles.
And there's like 50 kids like going for that. And I was like, oh shit. Like, it's just funny. It's because, of course, and it's like this very adult show and we can get into all that. Yeah.
It took me, the name of the show is The Days Are Short. And it's, I'm guessing he's the drama teacher, Greg Rosso.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's actually based on anything, but
no. Well, it was giving two things in pop culture that, like, because it was giving, like, you know, what if someone tried to write like an Arthur Miller play or whatever it may be, right? But then it was giving that episode of Friends where Joey is in a play that is like really serious for the first time and they all go to see it and he's like dating the co-star and it's like, do you guys watch Friends?
It's been a long time.
Dating the co-star and it's like really, it's really great and it seems like kind of an okay show. Like you don't think it's terrible. You're like, okay, it's not great and they're not great at this, but it's like a drama and they're doing the thing. And it's supposed to be like a big deal writer and director. And then at one point you finally see the show. Like you finally get to like watch a bit of it and it's like cutting through and it's been really intense. And then at the end he goes, I'll be back in the future. And then a ladder comes down from the ceiling with like smoke and lights. And she's like, will I ever see you again? He's like, no, but one day when I come back, you're going to have a daughter. I'm going to want to meet her. And then he flies away. It's really funny. Really solid moment. And then it was also giving the play in Birdman.
Oh, yeah.
That they're doing, which they're like, they're taking it so seriously. And it's based on this, you know, literature. And it's, you know, but it's actually kind of bad. Right?
Except they're in seventh grade. Like,
The
first thing that hit me was waiting by the board for casting, because that was more of a conservatory thing. Like, we would get there at 8 in the morning and just sit under the boards and wait. And I never got cast in conservatory, hardly ever. So it was always very disappointing for me. But the other thing it gave me was the inappropriate roles for two young people.
Yes.
Which comes up in theater camp, right? Where they have that discussion where they're like, now I know we're not sexualizing children, but like if we have to talk about virginity, like I know she's a virgin. Whereas you're like, stop, these are 13-year-olds. But it's, it, yeah, they did it well.
Can you get her there? I think I can get her there.
I think I can get her there.
Jesus Christ.
There. It's like... She's exude raw sexuality. She's 13. Jesus Christ.
So wrong.
Oh, so wrong. So wrong.
But so, yeah, so the cast list goes up, and of course there's the inevitable moment where the two friends have to look at each other and go, oh, fuck, I got it and you didn't. And then there's the whole, I mean, like, it permeates the whole first episode of, like, oh, but I didn't really want it. And then somebody walks up like, hey, good job. And you're like, yeah, thank you so much. Okay, yeah, I didn't really.
Yes.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. No, you have so to do real. It. I'm not going to do it. I can't do it not without you.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. And then, like, it's like, it almost, I was watching the episode being like, this happened to me. Like, they're writing my story. Because it didn't actually. But I was thinking about, like, of course, yeah. And then my friend would, like, end up being a techie so that we could hang out. And then they'd end up taking it a little too seriously. It always happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started thinking about stage managers in general.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the whole... Now, okay, I'm going a little too deep. Because I was... No, fuck it. I'm going to do it.
Do it. Do it. Dive, bro.
Hot,
dive.
This is my big hot take on the whole thing.
All right. Well,
of this first
it.
Episode. All okay. Right. Techies versus actors.
The antagonism.
Uh-huh. Yes. Now, everything they said is something I have heard in almost every theater space I've ever been
every
in.
Every single one.
Yes.
Every single one.
And it was proof to me, because I was like, right, that's how we talked in seventh grade also.
Right.
And I was like, wow, we are all still fucking children.
Yes.
One. Yeah. Yeah.
And two, like, fuck any actor who has anything against any techie, obviously, but they don't tend to. Sometimes, you know, if they, whatever. But fuck any techie who has anything against an actor. Because I agree with that moment where it's like, well, we're doing art and you're doing tech. And she's like, tech is art. And I'm like, tech is art.
It is art, absolutely.
But there is no one without the other. And if there's no bond there and collaboration, it's why shows end up having trouble. Because if there's a disconnect there, then the audience will feel it inevitably.
There was antagonism. I'm talking about college, but there was antagonism between the actors and the tech kids. And then there was weirdly antagonism between the theater kids and the film kids, which was just fucking stupid in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember halfway through being like, why aren't we getting along with each other? We have to be with each other all the time. And also, as an actor, these are the people that are handling my clothes and my lights and my mics.
Yeah,
and
why
do you want to piss them off?
Right. Yeah. And I do see it. I do see it on the other side where actors do that. But for the most part, I would argue, like, especially in the safe spaces like we've built and that we've been in and stuff, like, I've mostly seen actors be really thankful to the tech people and really like wanting to be their friends and on their good side. And I do still sometimes feel a bit of that animosity from the other side. And I'm not speaking as an actor, I'm speaking as a director or a writer even in the room sometimes, where I'm like, ooh, there's tension here before there's tension. Mm-hmm. Like, there's already, and actors are expecting it, so they've created tension. It's not just the techies' fault. They're sort of expecting to not be liked by the techies, and the techies are sort of expecting to get divas. And then they do sometimes, but then when they have to repeat themselves and they have to, you know, it becomes,
stop treating it
like a job they have to do all the time, and more like, everyone should know everything always, and why should I have to even be here? And you're
go ahead.
No, CJ, stage managers.
Our antagonism started in conservatory because the tech kids were expected to take, they had to take a semester of acting for tech folks.
Right.
As actors, we were required to do free labor. Sometimes it was with the St. Louis Rep, which was always fun to work with a professional crowd. But like most of the time, we were required to fill credits and go help the lighting design kids, hang lights and help build costumes and help do all this shit. Well, then we show up and then it's an 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. shift. And you come in and it's like, I don't know how to hang a light. Can you show? And then we're just these obnoxious children in there that they're like, yeah. if it was just me and the other tech kids, we could bang this out and it would be done. I wouldn't have to teach anybody anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it came in my program anyway.
Agreed. And I think what you're speaking to, and I want to be clear, I'm actually more on the tech side of things on this argument, yeah. right? But because I agree, actors can be fucking shit. But what you're talking about is mostly educational theater, right? In terms of like people having to work on tech as actors,
so that you can appreciate the work that everybody does. And right. I took that lesson with me from school, but a lot of people just got pissy with one another.
Agreed. And a lot of them also, like, you know, on strike days or whatever, the actors would find ways to do as little as possible and would give other actors a bad name because we'd be like, no, I'm trying to fucking strike. Help. I'm trying to, like, be a part of this. I don't know. I have a lot of trouble with, I've said it before on the podcast, I have so much trouble with those kind of people, with the people in the industry who don't see this as a collaborative process, who see this as just like a place for them to have a community and not actually a place to like respect each other and like create art, and like it's more just fun for them. I call it the island of misfit toys all the time. Mm-hmm. Of like,
sure.
These people who are just like, I do theater because people love me here. And I'm like, what if you did theater because we're all trying to like build something together and tell stories that could potentially like help people or like change them or like make them question something? And that's really all we're doing. But also, you know, applause is great. Okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
No clapping during rehearsal.
Oh, I wrote a little bit bigger note than that of the idea of a charismatic teacher. That you're
Michael
learning
Angerano.
From.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
can, that, go ahead, Scott, that does that shit with you in class.
No, yeah. It's funny because we were in the dressing room last night talking about acting teachers and guruism.
Yes.
Especially at that young age where it becomes, especially if you've already gotten bit and you have the bug and you want to do it and you want to be good at it. And then you have really dynamic teachers that you are immediately clinging to because, you know, they're validating you. And it's so easy because most acting teachers were actors. And so they have a need within them so it becomes this yin yang of yeah. spiraling of, I'm right. going to create the guru and I'll give in and become the guru. And the best acting teacher I ever had, Michael Connelly, walked into the room first day of class, like, I'm not your fucking guru. I'm here to make you a better actor. I'm not here to be your psychologist. I'm not here to be your counselor. And I'm not yeah. here to be your parent or your friend. I'm going to give you some harsh truths. I'm not going to be abusive or rude, but right. I'll be blunt and honest with you. And yeah. that's the guy that I learned the most from. And I had yep. other great teachers as well, but all of them sort of had a guru. And even he ended up becoming sort of an anti-guru guru because people started going to him because they knew that we would get honest feedback. And
he's sure. not like the others.
He's not yeah. like the others. And, you know, and it's an easy thing. And just those scenes in Pen 15 with those rehearsals and,
oh my God.
And he played it. Does anybody know who that actor is?
Michael Angerano. Did y'all recognize him?
He's a kid
not.
Actor, right?
Dude. I mean, he's more than that. I mean, I'm going to pull up his IMDb for you right now, but what I know him from is, I mean, he's in Almost Famous.
Oh, okay. That's right.
He is the young Patrick Fugit in Almost Famous. But he's also like, let me pull up his IMDb because you're going to be like, oh shit. He's in so much shit. It's like insane.
Right. I remember him in Almost Famous, and he's yeah. great because he doesn't, it would be so easy to walk in and play that character as over the top. And
well, did you ever see Sky High?
Yeah.
that's like one of his best films, 2005. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, but he finds this nice balance because Well, he's also the playwright. They're doing his play.
And the director. Yeah.
And which is very like Summer Heights High, which I love.
Yeah. Funny. And he's, yeah. But it's a nice balance there because there's just sincere moments, but then there's no applause during rehearsals.
No applause during rehearsal. And then they're all wearing it on their shirt later.
Yeah.
Yes.
Real quick. So Michael Angerano was in, or is it Angerano? I don't know. He was in Sky High, but most recently he's in Oppenheimer. He's one of the dudes. He's just like one of the guys in the room.
And I remember
when he popped up, I was like, oh, it's the dude. But he was on, like, he does a lot of episodes of things. He's been on a few episodes of like random shit. I really want to find something that you'll be like, oh, fuck, of course. Because he was in a ton of shit when he was a kid. Did you ever see the Forbidden Kingdom with Jackie Chan?
Good
movie. No. He's in that. He's in Lords of Dogtown. He's the kid with like the equilibrium problem who has like a brain tumor.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's in Seabiscuit. Almost Famous. All right. Well, I thought I was gonna blow y'all's minds, and now I just look like.
But no, he's. I recognized him. I just couldn't. Point and I knew that he had been a kid actor, so
yeah.
Can I bring
I'm not
up
Rappaport? I'm not Rappaport.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up one other another teacher thing that he did that I'm getting all my memories from conservatory. Being a teacher intimidating emotions or line readings out of you, I have a memory of I don't remember who he was, but he was some acting teacher expert or a working actor that everyone was looking forward to seeing. And he came into I think the juniors and seniors were taking a class together, and we were supposed to have prepared a monologue to bring in for him. And I brought in a monologue from Jean-Henri's Antigone, because I was at that time in my life was obsessed with playing Antigone. And
it's pronounced Antigone.
Oh, pardon me.
Antigone.
But at the top of it, it's her confronting someone. So she's supposed to be like really high up emotionally at the top of it. And she's telling him, you need to listen to me at the top. And I ran through the monologue and he said, and I can't remember what he said, but basically he had me run it again where he chased me around the room saying, you listen to me, you listen to me. And I was so scared and nervous that I just started crying because I couldn't remember my lines. But then he was like, that was perfect. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
No, and I disagree with that shit.
I do
and
too,
I think,
entirely.
And that's what they're poking at, right? Because it's like, and it's, now we're in Los Angeles. There is a really big school of thought out here that thinks that is it, that's how you do it. And there's
I'm
like
not
a deeper
into the method shit.
Well, I don't even know that you can call it that. It's a technique for sure.
It's almost like attack therapy. What we were talking about with
sure,
Dionysus in 60. It's like light attack therapy.
Yeah. And it's that thing where like you if you can't push yourself to that level organically as an actor, that's okay.
And especially when you're 20 years old.
Yeah, like, and if you need to do something to get you there that, you know, whatever that is, as long as it's healthy, like, okay, I understand. But it being forced upon anyone just randomly as, like, a student and, like, I'm going to break you. Today I'm going to break you. Today I've decided.
Yes.
I hate that shit.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
No, and it's abusive. And I think that, you know, when... We not to digress too much, but when we talk about guruism and that kind of psychological stuff, then when you start talking about the method and that core group of folks, you know, I think about the stories of Marilyn Monroe having what's his name on set to, you know, to help her get through it and find the moments and all that. And I think there's a healthier way to do it. I think that's why we talk about the Brits so much. The Brits kind of, there's elements of the method, quote, end quote, that they've implemented into their thing.
Techniques again, though.
It's technique. It's
like, because when we say method, the first thing I think of is, why don't you try acting? The Laurence Olivier quote.
Yeah, or whatever.
You know, because it's like, method to me is full Daniel Day-Lewis, full like Jared fucking Leto. Like, I am going to drink blood because I'm playing a vampire. Like, what?
Right.
Okay. You know, and like, I hope that made Morbius a better movie, you fucking idiot.
Everyone loved that movie, obviously.
Jared Leto's a bad actor. Is that a hot take?
He's also a cult leader. Look it up, everybody. He is a cult leader.
Yeah.
And a front man of a terrible band. And that's okay. Requiem for a Dream is still one of my favorite movies of all time.
Listen, he gets his blip. He gets his moment where he did a horrible
and an Oscar, wonderful movie.
He has an Academy Award.
For that movie?
Yeah. For Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, right.
Which is a bad movie? Question mark. I don't think there's a lot of great performances in that movie.
I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I think that now that casting in particular is problematic.
Yeah, I don't think you could put
white straight cisgender.
McConaughey's great.
McConaughey is great in that. I think that might be my favorite of his performances for sure.
Okay, but Mud and Interstellar got to be up there.
Interstellar isn't. I know.
The facial expression, really.
I just had a fucking brain. We have to talk about it someday.
It's the Anne Hathaway problem. Oh, I don't believe this. I don't believe anything that's happening now. Oh, she's acting.
Wait, what does that have to do with his performance in that film?
It just drops for me as a film.
It takes him out of the scene.
There's a scene which was one of my favorite lines that they had in this episode. I think he's really good in it. I actually think that True Detective is his best performance. I think he's extraordinary in that.
I could get behind that.
So I'm not anti-McConaughey or anti-Nolan by any stretch.
I just have to say this because there's one scene in Interstellar, and then I want to hear the line that you were talking about, CJ. So we can get back to Pin 15. There is a scene in Interstellar where, and it's memed now, so it's lost a bit of its, you know, juice, but there is a scene where he is watching his children grow into Jessica Chastain and Casey Affleck, which is horrifying in itself. Yeah. Timothy Chalamet turns into Casey Affleck, and he just loses it because he's lost like 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's the most vulnerable he's ever been. How about I say that?
Okay, right on.
Is it his best performance? No.
I could be that vulnerable if I was getting paid that much money.
CJ, I will make sure that you have that money coming to you someday so that you can get that opportunity to show us that, okay?
I just pay to get that vulnerable.
I'm going to get you in a Marvel movie.
Great, give me.
But you have to get full vulnerable.
Great, I'm in.
Naked, too.
I dare you.
All of us have to be naked in the movie.
Great, I'm in.
Shake on it, all of us.
Shaking.
Shake.
Full nude, full frontal. Okay.
Yes, I'm in.
Great. I love you all. Listeners too, you included. CJ, what were you reminded of in Pin 15?
Well, actually, I'm going to move. They did the one line thing that I've heard a billion fucking times in a billion fucking rehearsal spaces of "You're taking me out of the scene," like blaming someone else for your bad acting.
So good.
I feel like your character wouldn't do that. Like, that's another one I love hearing from other people. You know what I would do if I was saying that line? Like, that shit cracks me up. But the other thing that an overarching thing that I loved about this that does take me back to junior high was being a young theater kid and finding your tribe for the first time ever.
Yeah.
Because I was a weirdo fucking outcast at my school. And then the first time, it was the summer I was going into eighth grade, I went to the community theater 12 miles away and I did Music Man that summer. And they cast the whole play, like they cast families. So there was a ton of fucking kids in it my age. And it was the first time in my life that I was popular ever. Because I was surrounded by kids that all liked the same things that I did. And I was just a weirdo fucking outcast in Bluffs. But that was something I got from this. And it just wormed the cockles of my heart.
It is. Yeah. That's, you know, the part of the magic of that episode. Like, I remember that happening. I remember finding that tribe. And I remember doing my first, you know, play in, you know, freshman year in high school. And it's just a mess. Like, everything was a mess, you know. And, you know, finding your light and all that stuff is just fucking amazing.
Well, and what this episode ended up really being about is the earnestness of what we do. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I think so our podcast, we're supposed to, you know, discuss, debate whether or not this is theater. Obviously it's TV and they're doing theater, but is this a love letter to theater? Or like a takedown of theater? Because I think theater camp is a bit of a takedown. I think that's the opinion I've landed on about theater camp, which I'm fine with. But I wonder, this feels more like a love letter to me.
I think
they really love this shit.
I think it absolutely is. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, the magic of the show of nailing those feelings, finding out who you are and where you belong and all that stuff. And this nails that. It just nails it in a really beautiful way. And then there's just all the subtle stuff. There's the one kid who's clearly supposed to be gay coming in and telling the other kid that his hair looks nice, you should keep it that way, and then he quickly muffles
it up.
That
was one of my favorite moments of that.
It's really beautiful.
I'm so gay, it's not even funny.
I'm so gay. You know,
Scott, you too. I saw so much Scott and Gabe too. I was just
when you said you felt butterflies, I didn't feel any butterflies.
No, and then I've been the girl on the other side of that conversation. And
I've been on both sides of that conversation.
Same,
you know?
Same.
Like, oh my
I have
God.
Too.
You know, and then just all that, you know, the awkwardness of the kiss, you know, which still happens to this day. CJ and I, when we did Watson for the first time and we had to do the kiss, is so fucking awkward. And then it was,
and then you do it, and you're
directed.
Like, oh, okay, we're cool. Yeah. Whatever.
So grab her by the face and kiss her.
Oh yeah. Haley and I had to make out on camera for 10 straight takes.
But it was it was the director being like, cool, first take, can you just like go for it? And we were like, oh yeah. And she was like, but like, you need to like, it needs to be like gross, like sloppy. And we're like, how do you even feel comfortable jumping into that with somebody who you're like very close friends with?
Right.
But then you kind of just have to shut that part of your brain off and just go like, I'm just going to put my tongue down her throat and we're just going to see what happens. And then it became, after what? The fifth take, CJ? Became so like, so stupid.
It was like, for the listener,
I just ran.
I did a very low budget indie flick that had a sex scene in it. And you just, like, after take one, and everybody kind of takes a breath and laughs, and, you know, it's like, this is stupid. It becomes so mechanical. Like, I've always been fascinated by when, you know, two actors are promoting a film and they're being interviewed, and it's like, what was it like doing the sex scenes? Were your partners jealous? Your real life partners jealous? And they were like, no, because there's nothing there. There's nothing happening.
Yeah, right.
Because
every once in a while you get with someone that doesn't understand. I've had an ex-boyfriend be a real motherfucker about stuff like that before. So
Well, there's even that kid who like has the crush on Maya, who comes up at one point to Gabe, and Gabe's like, yeah, well, I'm gonna kiss Maya, who's hot, and he's like, yeah, but you're acting. It doesn't mean shit.
Yeah,
and Gabe's like, yeah. Does and then that's his impetus to go and be like, I want to kiss you for real, like my girlfriend, because it's all about impressing this other kid who actually has a crush on it's this whole thing. Really fun.
I loved the whole impetus of like, we have to become boyfriend and girlfriend if we're going to be kissing.
It's got to be real. Do you want it to be real? Yeah,
One of the lines I think that Maya says is, I want my first kiss to be with someone I love or whatever.
Or whatever. She's like, or whatever. I don't actually care, but that's what people say. It's really smart. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I was gonna bring up the sort of first meet and greet, the first time the actors show up on the set and they're all running around God. Like, and just
he literally
can you
says
find your
like,
light? I'm not feeling the warmth. You're saying that there's warmth, and I'm saying I don't feel that warmth.
There's
from
gonna
the lights.
Be a moment where all the actors run in, and they're gonna want to run around the stage barefoot, and they're and you're gonna have to step up, and you're gonna have to tell them to stop. And then she gets on the God mic, and just, and I was like, how many times have we all been in this literal exact situation? I laughed out loud, woke up my child when they went back for the shoes, and she went, oh, they're not back here, and she goes, God damn it, I left so hard I woke up my child. I was like, oh my God, there's so, because it's real, it's so real.
There's also, like, as an actor, like, you've been rehearsing on a bare stage or a gymnasium or whatever for how long, the first time that you walk onto the set that's built and full now, like, you lose your fucking mind. I still do as a grown-ass adult when you see your set finished. Exciting.
Well, we usually rehearse barefoot, so
I mean, as a choreographer, that's what I prefer, but I realize that's not possible all the time.
During tech, that's bad news bears, because you're gonna hurt your
I also just listen, theater floors are disgusting. I hate having dirty feet also.
Dirty feet gross, but like I don't trust those magnetic things to pick up all the
screws. No, they don't.
Can I tell you Scott, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to mention, what's his name? The older tech guy, the high school tech guy who's coming in. What's his name?
And I forgot, but he ends up, they're like, anything away to anybody, but they're like dating now. She's like dating, Anna's dating, right?
You mean Maya? No, Anna. Oh, that's right.
On the show, I'm pretty sure.
Ends up becoming. That was another thing I wrote down, was getting the opportunity to work with older kids, because I did the high school musicals when I was a kid, because they did shows that needed kids. So I got to hang out with high schoolers when I was in elementary school. And that was always weird, but fun and cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. He plays Steve.
Steve.
Who then you find out at the end that his parents went through a divorce, and they kind of like, and then he's drinking like Pinnacle whipped cream vodka or something, like something disgusting.
And they said he's a freshman, right?
He's a freshman. Which he's so probably funny. Getting like mercilessly bullied in high school, and now all of a sudden he's the older kid that gets to kind of come in and be the cool guy.
Oh, sure. I guess cool that's kind of what they're playing. Yeah, I like that. Okay, can I tell you my favorite part of the whole two episodes?
Sure.
So the second episode is more about the relationships and about all the things that, like,
it's about opening that.
I loved it. It's a blast. But the first episode hit me in 100 different ways. But the best part to me is something I've done every time I've ever acted, period. Okay?
Okay.
She's in her room, Maya. She has her script. And she's reading the lines, and she's working it out, and she says it like 10 different times, and then she finally like kind of finds it.
Yeah.
And then lights go out.
Yeah.
It becomes silhouettes. She's smoking a cigarette with a blonde wig, and she's like, perfect. And I, to the point where I'm like, oh, this actress needs to do dramas. Like, what are we doing with her? Like,
right.
And it's this phenomenal little, it's a bad monologue, but it, like, she does a perfect job of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day at rehearsal, she's doing that same monologue, and it's like falling apart, and the kid's eating the sandwich, and that's all she can hear, and the director's like, looks like you haven't put any work in on this, and she's like, no, I had it last night in my room. I literally have said that, whether in my head or out loud, every time I've ever acted. I was just like,
Oh yeah.
I had it last night.
Getting off book and you show up to your first off book night, and I'm like, I had this when I was folding laundry yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta get it in your bones.
Go ahead.
I have an important question concerning the second episode, and I'm fairly certain we've discussed this off mic, but what was your post show restaurant that the entire cast went to?
We had
the Coffee Kettle was where we would go after rehearsals. Coffee Kettle, and especially in high school and my first couple of years of college, was Coffee Kettle is kind of a low rent Waffle House, for lack of a better word.
Oh my God.
But you could smoke cigarettes back in the day when you could smoke cigarettes in a place. And then you would get, we would drink endless amounts of coffee. And then you could get a trash plate, which was hash browns smothered, covered, and chunked. So it would be hash browns with.
What?
Yeah. Hash browns
smothered, covered, and chunked.
That would it would be hash browns with ham, onions and green peppers, cheese, and then chili. And you could get
that
a plate
delicious.
Of that. You get a plate of that and a cup of coffee for, you know, less than $10 back in the day, and smoke cigarettes and talk about the show and get into it. It was open 24 hours, so you could stay there till 2 in the morning, you know.
Yeah.
Then later in college, it was it was the Nittany Lion Inn, which was the very fancy hotel close to, adjacent to Penn State, and that's where all the receptions were and the bar. Okay. And then there, you would have a whole spread on opening night. I mean, it was cool.
Yeah.
Bailey,
without a doubt, if you are from Wichita, Kansas, and you do theater, after every single show, everyone always goes to Old Chicago in Old Town.
Mm.
It's just where you go. And
what kind of restaurant was it?
Yeah,
it's a Chicago-based restaurant in terms of it's like a sports bar feel, but kind of a little nicer. It's a little more family, maybe closer to like an Applebee's, but with better quality. It's pizza mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But they have deep dish, and they do the whole Chicago bit.
Of course.
But they have, like, tons of apps and a lot of great beers and just fun, cool stuff on the menu. And it's got kind of like a BJ's feel. Have you ever been to BJ's?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's that kind of thing where there's, like, a giant cookie with ice cream you can get. And
a pizza
cookie.
Isn't that what those are called?
They can't call it that, I think, at Old Chicago or whatever, you know. It's a pizza cookie or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like not even like the greatest pizza ever. It's very good pizza. It's like, you know, it does the thing. Good garlic knots, good calzones, things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the vibe. They have huge tables. They have, you know, like they expect big families. They expect casts. They expect teams coming through to come and eat there. So it's that kind of vibe. And it always rules. And it always takes them forever to get the food out. And yet we still go. And we always annoy the shit out of them, and someone always ends up like breaking something or singing a song from Rent, and it's fine. La Vie Boheme.
Yes.
Yeah.
But ours.
It was yeah.
Ours wasn't super exciting, but we did. We had a Steak and Shake in Jacksonville that we went to, and it was. We would go. It'd be like 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. We'd stay till like 2 or 3 in the morning, and all we would do is drink refills of coffee and cherry cokes. Mm-hmm. And I think like the only thing we would buy were cheese fries.
Yeah.
But we were the most. We were the coolest and most important artists in the world when we were there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Of course. Top of the fucking
Well,
world.
Yeah. And everyone's still in their makeup. And I was like, I didn't even take it off.
Never. You want everyone to know you just did a show.
Yeah. You want people to ask. You're in full cat makeup, and they're like, "What?
You want people to ask?"
Yeah. You want people to ask.
Yeah.
Can I give you a tiny bit of? I was going to say trivia, but it's not really trivia. It's just like a cool tidbit that relates to us. But we can cut it, especially Scott, if you feel like we should. I won't say any names, but I guess you could look it up. But the woman who plays Gabe's mom auditioned for Mothers of God.
No way.
Yes, and was, to be honest with you, could have been her, could have been the person we cast. Like, honestly, it was like straight up, like just... tossed a coin. Like,
wow, that kind of thing.
Yeah. She's a phenomenal actress. Yeah, she's really great.
That's cool.
Good trivia. Tidbit. Yeah. Nice tidbit. Yeah.
What else? What have we got?
No,
we gotta get out of here.
It's, again, I think the show overall is so good. And the two of them, Maya and Anna, are extraordinary. I can't wait for their next shit.
Mm-hmm.
But that in particular, that they nailed it so well, and all of the scenes. We didn't talk about Anna saving the day with the glitter.
Oh,
and saving Maya, who goes up on opening night and can't remember
her lines. The worst feeling in the world.
Anna takes the things and sprinkles them, and she remembers, and it was
then it becomes the dance.
Yes.
And the sort of interpretive. Which
there's a fucking dream ballet in this. How more theatrical can you get than that?
Incredible. Very Agnes DeMille. But it also was giving Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Which is one of my favorite comedies of all.
I haven't seen it in so long, but I used to watch it like once every other day when I was younger.
Every performance is pitch perfect in that film. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Janine Garofalo especially.
Janine Garofalo.
Sound of Freedom's Mira Sorvino.
Sorvino. Oh, right. Was she in that?
She plays Jim Caviezel's wife in that.
She doesn't.
I know way too much about that film, but I swear to God, I haven't seen it.
I don't know. I think you have.
I would love to. I would watch it with you guys, but I'm not going to sit down and watch it by myself.
Yeah. Are we going to cover it on the podcast now?
No.
As like it's political not. Theater?
I don't. It doesn't need any more amplification.
No, it doesn't. No. It doesn't.
It's playing at AMC again. I'm like, AMC, do I have to boycott you now?
Yeah. Oh, gross.
Replaying it as a top five fan fave? Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Go see Barbie. Go see Oppenheimer again.
Yeah. They're showing a lot of cool horror movies right now, too, if anybody's got that A-list. Go
it's
check them out.
Spooky Halloween time.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I think I'm good. Thanks for bringing this up. This was great. Yeah, it was fun to watch and watch it again. And
fun to see Richard Karn on screen again.
What?
It's fun to see Richard Karn on screen again.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Al from...
Oh, he's great. He's so great.
Yeah. Movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If y'all haven't watched Pen 15, go out and watch it. It's so great from top to bottom. And to me, the thing that's theatrical about the whole thing is everyone immediately loved it and wanted it to keep going. And then they only do those two seasons while the second season has two parts. And they honestly said, like, we had to do it because all of the kids were aging out. Like, they weren't young enough or young looking enough anymore to play those parts. But the thing to me that's theater about it is it's there. There's two seasons. They're wonderful and magical. And then it's gone. That's all you get. And I...
Well, yeah. I mean, it's you know, it's what the Brits have been doing for so long. Like, the original British Office, that's only two seasons and a... And,
it's the only one I've seen.
Christmas special, yeah.
Yeah. And it's magical. Like, I like the American Office, too. Although it's aged... You know, weird. But that original is just perfect. It's perfect, and I don't need to know anything else about those characters.
Yeah.
Let it rest in my brain.
Yeah.
But thanks, y'all. That was fun. I hadn't watched it in a while, and it was great.
This was fun. It was fun to revisit, but also to like really take in for the first time for me. And I just, this is my theater camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like theater camp was great. And I do. I just, if I ever feel like I need to watch something like that again, I'll watch this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. Do we have any spitlets?
LA Spotlight.
I'll do a shout out for Life Sucks. It's playing at the Broadwater main stage. It's getting fantastic reviews both from critics and from audience, and it's playing through the end of October. Check out it's Interact Theater Company, so check out their website, interact.org, I think is their theater site, or you can visit the Broadwater theater site, but go get tickets because it's getting a lot of raves, and it's a fantastic set and some really cool lighting and stuff like that, so go look it up.
Mine is I'm helping out a friend of the pod, Dr. Daisha McGee. She has a clown bouffon show called Donkey, a cultural biography of a public school teacher that she wrote. And it's a one woman show she is performing in. It's part of the Spaghetti Festival at the Elysian Theater here in L.A. It's just one performance, November 8th at 8 p.m.
Okay.
And I can't wait to fucking see it.
Yeah, that sounds great. Cool. I will pitch. I will spotlight. all Los Angeles theater. Go see it.
Go see it. Dig it.
Just get out there.
Just get out there, guys. Thank you for joining us for CJ's pick, Pen 15, Season 2, Part 1, Episode 6, and Episode 7, the play and opening night. It was a blast. We hope you enjoyed it as well. Go watch the episodes if you haven't. That'd be weird. You should watch these episodes before.
What's
I don't
wrong
know.
With you?
We gave away one. okay, CJ.
What do we have coming up next?
Good call. Next week is
it's Roddy.
Next
I
week is Roddy Villegas, the winner of our. I'm sorry, y'all. I've had some
You're great.
CBD.
Yeah.
It's weed. I've had weed.
There's CBD
at the end
in
of
there.
The pot, I was like, oh,
you
were
lying.
This now. Yeah, there's probably CBD in there. Roddy Villegas, who won our Theater Playwright Fringe Award, and with the show Inferno, which we will be discussing. And then we have, was it two other scripts? Or three? I think there's just two, right?
I can't find it right now, but I will.
Anyway, obviously none of us have read them yet.
Yeah,
so
I haven't read it. There's three scripts, but one of them is selections from Interrupted Frequencies. So I think it's two full plays and then some chunks of stuff.
Amazing. Well, yeah. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to be talking to Roddy and discussing everything that that is Fringe and everything that is Roddy, and we're gonna have a blast doing it. Somebody could probably say that better than I just did. I'm sorry, I'm falling apart all of a sudden. I thought all I had to do was sing now. I was like, oh, good, we're good. I'm falling apart. Roddy, we love you.
Yes. Did y'all have questions or comments? Please reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. And our theme song is better than your fucking theme song. Boom.
Bitch.
There you go. Ryan also writes all of our stingers. He's a fantastic human being. And then finally, to the great award-winning yet controversial playwright, Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
She's pro-Palestine, right?
She's pro-Palestine.
Yeah.
We stay in a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are y'all feeling about Palestine and Israel?
I don't
know. No, I'm kidding.
I don't even
I'm
have
fucking
the
joking. Don't even get close to that. We love you all so much. Oh, by the way, after Roddy, we probably will just do another trio of picks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Intezake Shange. This is kind of production meeting, but I'm just saying it here so people know as well.
Yeah.
And then Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Because then we're done.
We're nearing the end.
So,
yeah.
That's the end of our year.
Tune in.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yes.
Cool. Well, subscribe, rate, review. It really does help.
Yeah.
Should have thought of a song.
Come on. Come on, Bailey. Come on, Bailey.
You're
the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. That's from Karate Kid the musical. Go ahead, CJ. I know you have something. Go.
Oh damn, now I just lost it.
No, what was it?
You have a story to tell, a novel you keep in a drawer.
Old sock drawer.
You have a painting to paint, but you're lazy like an old French whore.
Je suis whore.
You have a movie to make shrinky dinks you can bake, but you best bring a steak, cause in sweep the vampires in a vampire knee deep, and vampires filling you with doubt, insecurity about what your art should be. In sweep the vampires, die vampire. You sketch that turtle you
okay.
saw
right.
in
yeah.
and at.
Later,
no, go ahead.
Everybody.
I go on too long.
No, it's fine. Right? No, it's done.
Six
I'm done.
Verses.
I'm done.
All right. I just woke up my baby again. God damn it. I'm an asshole.
The theater. The theater. Hang out, Louie!
Theater. Theater. To be or not to be. Theater. Theater.